Namo Guru Me, Namo Buddhaya, Namo Dharmaya, Namo Sanghaya, Namo Guru Me, Namo Buddhaya, Namo Dharmaya, Namo Sanghaya, Namo Guru Me, Namo Buddhaya, Namo Dharmaya, Namo
So joy, good, high, child,
Oh.
感じで。
给力多大家就希望他每天都被见到的话就把这些被说说就他去天下天天天的就撒些别些就些没多大谁说那些你的节目三界见到每天为我就会让他见到这把来说一他们不如让他们的你安大呀咪三界之大诸界诸那那将诸八度大念将大义持久一遍诸那念诸那遍三界诸佛修三界之大诸界诸那那将诸八度大念将大义持久一遍诸那念诸那遍如果一种三界之大诸界诸那那将诸八度大念将大义持久一遍诸那念诸那遍三界诸佛罗哟
Good morning, everyone.
Ani de han da chi la ma chue na de ya da chi lu da long chue de zong ge zhe zhe sim jie zang ran de wen ju de chang me dong sheng de ming an le ji bei fa jin zao ba xin ge le xie song ban de xin da chi 也是，俺们泉州三百块大，就为俺杨明给那左右奶奶同胞大，俺们就今天，发现个杨明，他啊，俺们就让个女的龙叔，俺们就说，我得到的他就，他就毕业了呀，俺们就升级个团了呀，俺们就查身单，俺们就三年没了团呢，俺们就帮过我的，他都送回来是。
Great Tibetan Master Panchen Losang Chösingyalsen in his what we call Guru Devotion Prayer, or simply called Guru Puja or Lama Cheba, states, Kishala quoted the stanza from his memory, which basically states that bless us to be able to fulfill the perfection of generosity or giving by way of dedicating our body, resources, and roots of virtue or positive energy without any sense of clinging to them or attachment to them, but dedicate them for the benefit of all other sentient beings. So in this stanza, what we can see is the way in which Bodhisattvas really did practice the perfection of giving, or what we call Dan Paramita. When Bodhisattvas practice giving, really they truly give it, meaning that there's no any sense of attachment to the things they give or to whom they give. But they give everything they have, just as each of us has these three things. We have this body, we have some resources, and then we create a lot of virtues or positive energy. So we could give all of them for the two others, you know, to be able to realize the enlightened state for their sake. And we should do that, you know, without any sense of attachment.
You know. No. I'm not sure.
As I mentioned some time ago, that you know, relating to the practice of giving, there is what we call the method, or Tibetan called thab, that goes with it, which in a sense is the process that we go through, and it involves a number of things. Number one, we called it just literally translating excellent state of mind, which is to do with motivation. Yeah, and so when we practice giving, you know, we cultivate a positive motivation, especially, let's say, compassionate motivation, which is basically when we think about those who are in need of our help, poor and needy, or those who are in need of our help, we try to understand the situation in which they are in, and then we truly wish them to be free of their difficulties and the causes of difficulties. And this is what we call a compassionate state of mind or motivation. So this really fulfills the excellent state of mind or the thought at the beginning. Now when we actually engage in the giving, which is the actual action, we call jorwa. So that time we really give it very happily and respectfully. Okay, whatever the things we have to give, we do it with a sense of delight, you know, and with happiness and with respect. Okay? But at the end, when we conclude this practice of the action, you know, we do it properly, meaning that we don't have any sense of regret for having whatever we did. You know, just we should rejoice in the good action we did, not like, oh my gosh, I gave too much, or you know, some kind of regret. You know, I shouldn't have, you know, done that. So that's how, you know, the whole process of giving, or the method of giving, it involves cultivating excellent motivation of the thought, and then the proper action as we engage in it, and then proper conclusion of the action. So when we do that, the whole process, it becomes really very neat and you know, pure process.
What did this one done? That's it. Any sample person saw was at it. So any ninji kun the lang over this. In a done ninji kun the lang segi any city make a chimba and tang segi tang you. You, Yanda, the Sengil Miyadris, Taya Anish, Chimbatang say you wishing Telian, Yanta, the Sengil Chugo Maris, Telian, Chi Yuan Digishing, Antig Lamada, Antig Gunjola Soba, and Yuan Digishing, Penda, where she did, so Pamela Soba, 아니 지금 이게 동해가 나르베 아니 지금 양다베 아니 심지 동해가 나르신데 심지 어떤데 저희 지금 당시에 신들 단데데 만다 어느 숨유대르스 숨유전한데 연대기 신 아니 지금 함 라마다 군조를 써봤는데 지금 어떤 유기 신선자 들려야 아니 지금 인지군에 나스게 요마르스 네 삼바데 소소치 장조국 승리군에 남조야르스 당시 강으로 아니 지금 하베 다지 장조 파약 치도 인상바 아니 지금 근데 연대의 신 안파 라마를 써봤던데 정신게 이제 너데 아니 야 퓨야 와다 제가 란서 다데데 슐로 뜨는 신경고 군도던 소리 안 좀 내도당 안 타가는 신 연접당 안 즉 체벌로 써봤어서 그야도 저거 연대의 신 한 상계를 야 체벌 제도도 그야도서 장조의 신 군대 랑도 오고 그랬지.
So when I emphasize the need to cultivate, you know, compassionate motivation or compassion as a motivation, as we engage in helping the poor and needy or practice giving, I don't mean in any sense that, you see, compassion has to be the motivation all the time in our practice of giving. Let me explain that. What I do mean by that is when it comes to giving, which is Jinpa Dan, it has been explained in the Buddhist literatures that it depends to whom we give. Okay? But there are those we call the objects of reverence or the objects of excellent qualities, which basically, for example, includes our spiritual gurus or the masters and the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. So we can also give them in the sense we make offerings to them, which is a part of the practice of giving or generosity. But in such a case, we don't do the practice out of compassion. You know, we don't, you know, feel compassion for our gurus or the Buddhas or the Bodhisattvas, because that would be the wrong state of mind. Okay. In such a case, when we make offerings, for example, we do here at our altar, you know, you bring flowers and you, you know, set up the water bowl offerings, or you light the candle lights or butter lamp or whatever the case may be. So you are making all these offerings, which is in a form of giving, to the Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, and Gurus, but you do it with maybe bodhicitta motivation, that you said, I would like to become a Buddha for the benefit of all sentient beings. In order for me to be able to realize that state, you know, I would like to make this offering to you, or I would like to give this thing to you. Yeah. So, you know, it's a different, excellent motivation, the state of mind, as you can see. Yeah. And then also, we could also give to, there's a mention about giving to those who have been very kind and beneficial to you. And the example that's given here is our parents. Our parents are seen as what we call the field of benefits. You know, they have benefited you a lot. Okay? So it depends to whom we give. As we said, we can help the poor and needy, or we can give to the Buddhas, Bodhisattvas and Gurus, or we can give to our parents and, you know, such individuals or people who have been very beneficial to you. So we have to think about all these matters as, you know, we engage in the practice of giving. Of course, there are different types of giving. As you know, you may know, there is the giving of material things, right? Then there is the giving of protection or the safety, and then there's the giving of discourse or spirituality. You know, all these forms of giving. What I have been discussing thus far is more focused on giving material gifts, if you will. Okay. But related to this, I want to talk about some what we call secondary topics related to this giving, where, because in our everyday life, we face you know, situations such as that you know, somebody borrows something from us, and then that person, for whatever reason, either never returns the thing to us, or that they use it is completely, you know, become useless anyway. Yeah? But still, in this kind of situation, we need the practice of giving, how to approach, you know, situation like this. Or that, you know, some people, you know, this, also you lose things, you know, maybe they steal your property or things, whatever the case. Maybe it's another difficult situation. I think the practice of giving could also help us to approach this kind of situation properly, you know.
What in the sense that I'm going to tell you? I'm not sure if you're going to tell me. I'm not sure if you're going to tell me. I'm not sure if you're going to tell me. Samtaya, Tavan and Shinga Danga Jala Shinga, and the Guinea, the Tosanane, and Lavazan for a Guinea de Leta, for a Kuguyo, for a Pebble Shores, the Lutanga. Or the Tavan and Shinga Danga Jala to the Shinga Yan Shinga, and Pajuja and Pema to the Jusanane, Telasanada, and the Shinga Yan, and the Namkin Bebe Tone, and Tigris, Kayo Maris, or to the Chen, the Takhanda, Kumjin Tovo to Zodi.
So when we find ourselves in such situations where either, you know, we lose something, you know, or that somebody borrows something for us and they never return it to us, or they return it but now it's anyway useless, or that some people need something from us and they steal it from us, whatever the case may be, you know, under those circumstances or in that situations, you know, as a practitioner of giving, it's better for us to think positively about them and dedicate whatever is already gone. You know, that, you know, okay, maybe we realize that this other person needs whatever he or she stole from us more than what we need. And so we said, okay, may their needs be fulfilled, and I'm just happy with that, and dedicate it, you know, for their well-being. And don't hold on to the thing we already lost with the kind of miserliness and stinginess, or then think all kinds of negative thoughts about, you know, how could this be, that, I mean, all kind of stuff. You know, don't go in the whole, you know, vicious way of thinking. So the one of the reasons, you know, to be able to do that kind of thinking, letting go, is really focusing on impermanence and the transitory nature of things. Okay, because after all, everything that exists is disintegrating moment to moment, and eventually everything will, you know, everything will go away one day. So it doesn't matter you lost today something, but eventually, even if you didn't lose it, you know, it won't be with you. It has to go. Okay, or somebody took it from you, but eventually that's the way it is. Anyway, you know, you can't own it forever. And so it's better to kind of reflect on the transitory nature of things, how everything, you know, will at the end so decay and completely disintegrate. So it's understanding such reality of things that we practice let go. Okay, maybe somebody needs more than I do, and I just dedicate it to or for those people. So I think, you know, when we find ourselves in such a situation that we lose something, in whatever ways, as I just mentioned, that should also, maybe as we think about, like, okay, anyway, I'm going to lose that thing eventually, okay, no matter what. And so anyway, it is gone, maybe a little early, okay, so that's just fine. Okay, that's in the law of nature. And then we think about ourselves. Well, the one who thinks I'm going to own it, but one day the one who owns it has to go too, right? So I'm not here forever. So one day this thing I cherish so much, life or the body, has to go too. So okay, we just kind of understand the phenomena through the right perspective and accept, you know, what is going to be eventually happening.
Okay.
Really, the fact of the matter is, you know, I mean, getting attached to whatever we have is really pointless. I'm thinking of these different situations that could happen, or it has happened to many, and it could happen to us, any of us, right? Okay, we might have a lot of things that we want to own for a long time. And sometimes before we could ever have a chance to use the things we bought, life comes to an end. So the one who owns them goes first before the things, you know, we bought. Okay, that happens. Or while you are using it, right, something happens. You know, maybe the thing breaks down or your life snaps and, you know, there it is. Okay. So all of these are, reality that happened to people and that could happen to us. And so reflecting on these things, then we should be able to kind of look at things from proper perspective and approach the situations, you know, more realistically, if you will, you know.
What the Jaladazo Aranzo would you Jaladazo?
I think maybe as we make efforts to accumulate resources or we harbor things, you know, I think our whole mindset is, okay, I need these things, you know, so one day I need to use them or I need, you know, all these things. But what could be happening to us in many times is, that these things have a lot of control over our life. Okay, we think like, okay, I will use it one day, whatever the case may be. But in the meantime, before we really get a time or whatever opportunity to use it, these things have been always like bringing us worries and concerns and, you know, attachment and all those things. It's as if the things we buy are really using us, you know. And it just makes us more deluded and, you know, worry and concern and all of this, you know, stuff is happening and make our life, you know, more difficult. So the point I'm trying to make here is that, yes, realistically, we need a lot of things to exist and to function. We need to use them. But learn to use them, you know, with the understanding of impermanence, okay, with the understanding of letting go practice, you know, use them if possible without attachment or reduced attachment. So that's much better way to approach the things anyway we need to use in our everyday life. Okay, don't let the things rule over us and have too much control over our mindset, you know.
What interesting that that's a good and chalagi and it is a pamba pinja. What a tall tomo.
And then, of course, probably you know this all, you know, better than I do, that, you know, sometimes, you know, things bring a lot of troubles in our life, right? That, you know, when... you know, I mean, the families, they really become enemies of each other over some property or something, you know, that they couldn't agree with, you know, who should have what or who should get what. And it's the same thing, you know, between husband and wife or among the business partners, you know, it's over the property resources. Now they have so much conflicts and, you know, their relationships sour. It's the same thing among the relatives, you know, before they seem to be very harmonious and friendly. Once these different properties come up, now they are up against each other and, you know, they don't want to talk anymore. What if all this thing, we know in so many problems that, properties could bring into our life. You know, if we really don't understand them properly and approach them, you know, in the right way. So not only when we are living and we need to use all the things we need to use in our life, that we should try to approach them from the right perspective and use them properly, as I said, you know, without attachment or less attachment, or with understanding of impermanence. But at the end of our life, also, I mean, possible, let's say, if we kind of know for sure or almost certain that we are not going to live that long, so we better dedicate whatever we have, you know, ahead of time and give them away to whoever need them or dedicate them to and for others. Okay? But something like that, we couldn't do it. Somehow the life passes by and, you know, we are just at the end of life. But at that time, at least we can try not to still hold on to the things that we couldn't bring with us anyway. You know, better let go, clinging and attachment to the things.
What did that sound like? What did that mean? That in there, and it's in the Nancy Yua, and you were data, Chugichin Badis. What that Chugichin Balia, and it's in Nancy Ma, Chugichin Badima, and Chugichin Ba, and Chinsigi, and you.
So I think that would suffice with regard to material giving or giving of material gifts. Let's now move on to talk about giving of dharma or spirituality. And here we will talk about a number of points to whom we can give this kind of a gift and with what kind of a mindset or motivation we should make this gift. So when we say giving dharma, what does it really mean? What kind of a dharma, if you will? And then how to give? Okay. So these are a number of points we are going to deal with relating to the second type of giving, which is called giving of dharma or spiritual gift.
Yes.
Yes. So with regard to the recipients, for the gift of spiritual gift, it is said that he or she or they should be someone, who have respect for spirituality. Okay. So what does it mean, the recipients for the gift of spiritual gift, are expected to be someone who respects spirituality. When we really look more into that, what it really means is, as you may recall from the Lamrim teachings, or the teachings on the graded path to enlightenment, when we talk about different types of recognitions and awareness that we need to cultivate, the six of them. And for example, that we should, see the teacher of Dharma as if he or she is like an expert doctor or physician, right? And the teaching that is being given should be seen or recognized more as like a medication that we need to take. So the recipients, the recipient should be someone who have that kind of recognitions for the Dharma and for the teacher. Yeah.
What interesting is that
And of course, the recipients also should have the ability or the capability to understand, understand the spirituality or dharma, So should have, the intelligence to be able to understand spiritual matters or the spiritual concepts, if you will.
Yes.
So the recipients, you know, understand that the spirituality, the gift they are receiving, is really for the purpose of counteracting their deluded states of mind. Because the whole purpose of receiving the spiritual gift is to bring about that inner transformation. Because we see that these delusions we have inside are the ones who really bring us a lot of troubles. You know, it disturbs our mind, it brings us more problems and suffering. And the antidote to our delusions, to overcome them, to get rid of them, is the spirituality or the Dharma. So therefore, Dharma is very important, it's very precious, it's a very precious gift, and the one who gives you that gift is also very precious and deserves your respect. And also, I mean, there is some understanding that the spiritual gift that one receives is not only beneficial, you know, in this life or to this life, but also it's more beneficial to future lives, you know. And of course, when we look at this whole spiritual gift, you know, I mean, there are a lot more things to talk about, I think which we will deal with as we later on when we reach a relevant section here. But now what I want to talk about a little bit is about the mindset with which one makes this gift. In other words, the one who is making the spiritual gift. Okay? So that person must, you know, not make the gift out of ulterior motives. Such as that I want to, you know, gain some kind of a fame and reputation, okay? But that's the wrong mindset, wrong motivation to give gifts. Or that, you know, if I do this, some people might like me, and then they're going to bring me more gifts and rewards and kind of things. Okay, you know, I'll play the game or something like that. No, that doesn't work here. Yes.
What they are,
Great Indian Buddhist sage scholar Acharya Dharmakirti, in his Pramana Vartika, or the Valid Cognitions treatises, said, as Geshe-la quoted the two lines from his memory. Basically, what he's saying is that the one who gives teaching of Dharma should do so without deluded motivation. So what that really comes to is has to teach out of compassion, out of bodhicitta. These are the right mindset or the motivations with which to give spiritual teaching, to make a spiritual gift. The one who really makes the spiritual gift has to really check with his or her state of mind and find out whether I'm doing this, you know, out of some worldly, you know, concerns and in ulterior motives or not. Because then that's a wrong mindset, but has to really cultivate the right kind of state of mind, such as compassion and bodhicitta. Yes.
What is that? That is true. Such as somebody, ani chung yu sa de.
No.
That chung yu sa de, ani pge. So
So what is that a spiritual gift consists of? If you say, it is stated that, of course, based upon authentic original teachings of Buddha, which are contained in sutras, Ka in Tibetan, Do in Tibetan, and then there are the commentarial treatises on Buddha's original teachings called Shastras or Tenjo in Tibetan. So from any of those collection of Buddha's teachings, if one explains, say, one stanza, that would constitute a spiritual gift, but one should do so, you know, correctly. You know, don't give a misleading information or misinterpretation of Buddha's teaching, but give the proper explanation, let's say, of one stanza to someone with the proper motivation. That would constitute a spiritual gift. So what really we can see here is to be able to make a spiritual gift of such as is the one I just an example given, that means first oneself has to be really well educated, if you will, in the spiritual matters, right? If things are unclear to oneself, then there is nothing to make a spiritual gift. Again, I want to quote a great Indian master, Acharya Dharmakirti, and Geshe-la quoted the lines from his memory, which he said that the things which you are going to share or teach others, if those things remain concealed for your own mind, hidden, means you don't know about those things, then it's very difficult to talk about or teach these things to others, because things are not clear to your own mind. And so that means we need to learn about the spiritual matters, and know the things well to be able to make spiritual gifts to others. So representing Buddha's teachings authentically is a key to this, right? If you are going to share a few words of Dharma, at least you really know, the real meaning of those words or, the teachings. Now, with regard to how to make the spiritual gift or how to give teaching, which, in this case, is that it has to be validated by what we call the Buddha's original teachings and the valid reasoning. So the two resources that teachers use is that they have to check back whether it's something Buddha himself taught, originally, so can use Buddha's words to authenticate and validate one's teaching, or that one finds the valid reasons, correct reasons to be able to back up one's explanation and teaching. So that is the proper method, the way to teach. So why do we really need to depend upon Buddha's words or the authority of his words and also the valid reasons, proper reasonings, is to, to bring about the credibility to the teaching, the authenticity to the teaching, so that, one doesn't just cook up everything in one's mind and, say the nice and funny and things and, as if that is really what Buddha taught or what Buddhism is all about. And you can't be too smart and say the smart things and as if that is the authentic teaching. No, it has to be whatever spiritual gift one makes, it should be authenticated, validated by what we call lung, means Buddha's words, and scriptural authority, and by valid reasons. So in Buddhism, there is so much emphasis given on, the power of, if you will, the Buddha's words, the actual words, to support one's teaching or the presentation, but more so on the valid reasons, the Rīpāyānda, the correct reasoning. You know, Buddhism really emphasizes, so it's not enough just to be able to quote Buddha. That's what Buddha said, okay? No, but if possible, you should be able to give the authentic reasons why Buddha said what he said, okay, and why that has to be the truth, so to speak. Okay, so reasoning, junzhen yangda, correct reasoning or valid reasoning, it has so much importance in the Buddha's teaching and in Buddhism. A great teacher, Manjushri Lama Tsongkhapa, sitting over there, or called Jerumbuche or Jawal Loksang Thakpa, all three names meant the same person. He said in his one of the most eloquent words that Lama Tsongkhapa wrote is about the distinction between that which is definitive and that which is interpretable in Buddha's teachings. In other words, that everything Buddha said cannot be taken at a face value. Okay? Some requires valid interpretations, but the valid interpretation doesn't mean any more, and this is what it is. You know, it has to be dependent on so many other things. So Lama Tsongkhapa wrote this profound treatise called Tangye Lekchen Nyingbo, eloquent explanation of that which is definitive and that which is interpretable. Okay? And in which he said, again Geshe-la quoted the lines from his memory, that if a teacher, you know, contradicts valid reasonings, then that teacher cannot be an authentic teacher or valid teacher. Because Buddhism really respects, you know, the correct reasonings and valid reasoning. So you cannot go against valid reason and still claim yourself to be qualified and authentic teacher. Because if you go against valid reasons, you know, you are not a valid a teacher.
What in the sense of teacher region? Some in the region, Rangi region, and Teji region, teacher region, and all some.
So why is it important for us to be able to really, rely upon authentic reasoning? Is because Buddha taught all kinds of things, you know, to suit the needs and dispositions of many different individuals or people. Okay, so even in Buddhism itself, we recognize that Buddha taught at least three discourses, types of discourse. You know, Buddha gave discourses to those with what we call Shravakas mental dispositions, or the hearers' mental dispositions, because they have a different interest and different capacities. Then Buddha taught the different things to, or the discourses to, those with solitary realizers' mental dispositions, we call Pratyeka Buddhas. Okay, they have different mindset, different capacities. Then Buddha taught different discourses to those with Mahayana inclinations or Bodhisattva's inclinations, recognizing that they have a different interest and capacities. So the Buddha taught different things to different, you know, groups of individuals, taking into account their interests and capacities. And so everything Buddha said cannot be taken at face value. So many things could be, but other things need valid interpretations. Okay, and based upon the reasonings. And that's why even in Buddhism, Buddha has, as we say in Buddhism, we talk about at least four major philosophical systems or schools of thought, right? And so why? Because these schools, you know, at certain levels, the way they understand realities are very different. But they all can trace back to Buddha, okay? And so we cannot mix all these different philosophical systems into some kind of a chow mein or something. He didn't say that, but you know what I mean? And then present it as if that's the authentic teaching. Now you really messed up everything. You know, you really have to be able to differentiate all the nuances of the philosophical systems and why Buddha said what he said, and under what circumstances, whoever he said it, whatever he said it, what time, you know. So many things that we have to take into account to be able to represent Buddha's teachings, you know, to different peoples authentically. See, so that's the challenge, and that's the strength and the profundity of Buddha Dharma.
What did that sound like? No, she didn't have no kung lung chigo go to your maris. Then I'm tumble running. No, Kansa Martins, she the ten shots. That was a bear. No, she could be young Tarotan and Jack will be your song with yours. And yes, somebody's Tumbe Song Shares, Tetanga, and Yiji Matches. Oh, Pigelia, and yes, Song Shaggy, Chetelia, Tarje Chesh, Chetel Tashos.
I mean, Buddha has been very, how should I say, upfront about his own teachings. In Buddhism, we talk about four different types of reliances, you know, one of which is, he says, do not rely upon a person, but rely upon his or her teachings or the words. Okay? So this also applied to Buddha himself. He said, you know what, don't simply accept it because I'm called Buddha and Buddha said so, okay, then you go by that. Okay? Just take time to investigate my words or the teachings. If they make sense, if they, you know, capture the truth based upon your investigations and valid reasonings, then accept it. You know, so what is more important, even in the case of Buddha, is what he taught, not what who, you know, not because he's a Buddha. You know, don't rely upon Buddha as a person, but rely upon his teachings, you know, and investigate it and find out for yourself what the truth is.
What is Songya the Chudelia and it's Tang Dunda? And it is me or this, then you get an energy, Tang Dunda Matters. And it's a little meeting the tensions, meeting the tashos.
So then Buddha said, don't rely upon a person, but rely upon his or her words or the teachings. And then he said, there are two types of teaching or interpretations, if you will. You know, two types of meanings. But he said, rely upon the definitive meaning, but not on the interpretable meaning. Okay, so that which is a definitive is what it is, you know. So go with that, but not so much with the interpretable meaning.
You know?
And then he said, of the words and the meanings, rely upon the meanings, not so much on the words. Okay? Of different consciousnesses that you have, rely more on your mental consciousness, but not so much on your sensory consciousnesses. So Buddha, you know, laid out his principles, if you will, the whole kind of a scientific, you know, framework here. He said, don't rely upon the person so much, but rely upon his or her teachings. Okay? That means find out what the teachings are all about. Okay. Don't rely too much on the words, but rely more on the meanings. If the meanings make sense, that's the way, whether the words are beautiful or not, you know. Don't bother too much with that. And of the definitive and interpretable meanings, go with the definitive meaning, you know, but less with the interpretable meaning. Of your consciousnesses, rely more on your mental consciousness, but less on your sensory consciousnesses.
Okay.
So for example, many of you are probably familiar with Heart Sutra, right? Heart Sutra, or what we call Prajna Paramita Hridayam Sutra or Sharvanyipu in Tibetan is a Heart Sutra. And where you find many words such as no form, no sound, no smell, no this, no that, whatever, you know. Well, the fact of the matter is we know there are forms, there are sounds, there are smells. So what does it mean? No form, right? No sound, no smell. So we can't simply go with the words. Well, that's what the Buddha said. No form. Okay, no form. We can't go with that, you know. And so this is what we mean. What is the real meaning behind these words? No sound, no smell, etc.
What does that mean?
So then we're looking at the Heart Sutra, right? From different Buddhist philosophical standpoints of the systems, we could gain different perspectives, understanding on these things. Yeah. So when we look from the Chittamatran or the mindfulness school of thought, they may have a different understanding of what does it mean, no form, no smell, no sound. Then you look at the Madhyamikins, the middle way philosophers, right? And they will have a different interpretation, understanding of it. But within the middle way school, then there are the, there are the Prasangika Madhyamikins and the Savatantrika Madhyamikins. Again, they have a different. Why? Because each different philosophical systems, you know, have a different way of looking thing, and there are subtle differences, you know. But all of these things are rooted in Buddha's own teachings. So we really have to kind of, this is where, when we really get into the depth of the matter, so these are the things we need to learn about and then understand, you know, how different Buddhist schools of thought understand, you know, Buddha's words, such as Heart Sutra, you know.
What the Tawa Tara and Mandal Sum Yung Yunza, Tawa Mandal Tara Sung with the Combate in Boyores to the Mouses of Mazing and the Tawa Tower, the Anitic Lola, Anitic Shower Dan, Shengu, you know, Tawa Rapa to the Nil Shengu Yores, the Tawa Rapa, the Nen, the Len, Ting, the Nen, the Len Towers to Senyam, Shendoga Mandalasa.
So why are there so many different philosophical systems of thoughts presented within Buddhism with regard to the realities, to understand? But the fact of the matter is, we need to really, prepare our mind to be able to understand subtle and subtler, you know, versions or the interpretations of the realities, plus we have to know about the what we call the coarser level of interpretations of what the realities are. If we don't understand how the realities are presented in the lower schools of Buddhist thoughts or the philosophy, it would rather be very difficult or presumptuous for us to say, you know, I want to know the ultimate view of what Buddhism says about this. Well, that is so subtle, you know. Well, we don't know a thing about what Buddha said, you know, about, you know, other schools of thought. So this is why we need to educate ourselves gradually, if you will, so that as we get more acquainted with, you know, different interpretations and understanding of reality, each leads us to the next level, the more subtle and subtle level, and that's how we are able to understand the subtlest, if you will, the viewpoint of reality presented in Buddhism.
What did you say that? That's true.
So if we are very serious about learning Buddhism in depth, so to speak, then really it is important for us to learn about different philosophical viewpoints of Buddhism on realities. Okay, and so as we learn about different schools of thought leading to the higher levels of thought, then we really get very broad perspective and distinctive perspectives on realities as presented in Buddhism. Okay. And otherwise, you know, we really get confused. Yeah? I mean, even in our monastic education, where, like I said before, we really studied about different philosophical schools of thought, when we are dealing with what does truth mean at a basic level, well, now you get confused because there are so many interpretations and presentation of what the truth is or what the truths are, realities are, at the level of the basis. But when you learn about different schools of thought, then you say, ah, this is what this school accepts. That's what that school accepts. Why is this different from that? And why this seems to be better and more profound? You know. So then you really get, you know, the in-depth understanding of realities. So once you really learn well about this thing, then it is like metaphorically speaking, like you are standing on top of the rooftop, you're looking down. You have a very wide perspective. You know everything down below, right? There's house there, there's that house, you know. But once, when you're not on the top, you're from here. This is what your perspective is, you know. You don't know what's on the upstairs and above that, you know. So this is how it is. So we have to learn gradually these different schools of thought, and then we can get that broad perspective from the rooftop, you know.
What did that danger to move on that there is? That then down was on it. They found out there is. That then it then again, it should then have a duck, be a sumo book in top, then have a top condition and then go out as in a tear and say, Sanga Chum didn't take that tower. Jamaican, she be to go. Chair the Tumbar Majawas and then Nella Tabara. Channel Charles, the Sung Yoris, Lassam, we get you to the Mojit, then Chubu Yamaris, then say again, Jija, and Quadi Kasa Delian, Taja Chishos.
So now I'm relating to how to teach or make the spiritual gift, just to use that term, is in the sutra or discourse requested by a female. Practitioner called Dawatama, which is Chandra Prabha. So it must be Chandra Prabha Sutra. If I reconstruct the name of the sutra, probably that is a good, I think, recapture of the sutra name. So it would be Chandra Prabha Sutra, where it is said that if someone said, okay, can you give me a teaching, just don't jump right on the bandwagon. Oh, yeah, let's do it, you know. Take time to investigate, you know. Take time to examine whether this is the proper recipient of the teaching or this is the right time, so etc. You know.
What did
So why really a teacher needs to take time to examine whether it is the right recipient of the teaching or not is because not everybody comes with sincerity and asking for teaching. Some come with hidden agenda. Okay? So if that's the case, so the giving teaching could either, you know, could kick problem for the teacher. So it has to be, you know, take time to be able to sort of assess, you know, if possible, the mindset of that person and the situation.
What did that say? And no, and it's a country to get a young
But on the other hand, let's say an individual really sincerely wants to learn about, practice, learn about the Dharma. Now, even if he or she doesn't make a sort of a formal request, but you know that person's interest something, then it's okay to even, so to speak, volunteer to teach that person.
Okay. What did that
So to be able to practice this form of giving spiritual gift, which usually we, you know, see more in terms of giving Dharma teaching, well, then it seems like only those who are the Dharma teachers could do it. Well, that's not the point here. Anybody can do this, make this kind of a gift, provided that, you know, we do it out of compassionate motivation. And let's say out of compassionate motivation, someone needs your advice, and you have the right advice to give. So out of compassionate motivation, if you provide the advice nicely, that could also constitute, you know, a giving spiritual gift, you know.
An 다가는 신고 소소지 아니 간데
Or that when we do our daily practices, you know, if you can visualize that, okay, in my surroundings, so there are all these invisible beings. You know, maybe there are the divine beings, there are the nagas, there are any other beings. So, you know, so you wish that when they could hear the words of the Dharma or the practice that you are doing. So with the proper motivation, when you do your daily prayers or recitations, this could also constitute, you know, the gift of making spiritual gift to them. Yeah. So I think maybe this is a nice place to kind of pause for today, giving the spiritual gift. And any questions, please? Oh, any announcement you have? Yeah. Okay. Sure. Oh, is it at 2 now? I heard it was like 1 and 5. What happened? Did you get that? Okay, anyway. Okay. Anyway, these are written, so I don't worry about forgetting it. Otherwise, I have to say it when somebody tells me. Yeah. Any questions, please? Yeah, Mimila.
I always feel that with us, with our background and so forth, it's so difficult to get all of the different
perspectives, you know, right?
Yes. Uh-huh. And this is why I guess we do have the.
That what Geshe-la mentioned is, you know, the importance of getting exposed to different philosophical systems of thoughts of Buddhism on realities, so we learn the fundamentals and then move to the intermediate and then move to the higher level, so that when we get to the highest level, our understanding is like you are looking at things from the rooftop, you know. But the things happen is because of our backgrounds, because our teachers often, they give us the highest level of thought, and we really are maybe clueless much about all about other things. So that's the even issue. Maybe we can learn about other things and what is practical to our everyday life. You know, this is the one. Yeah, they can answer that. Chungba ina chik chuta kangkal alba lobjong che rwa. And ragdim ne shingi shingi jen ya chimi ina. Rwa ta tao thosha de maso ne gochoya le ta kuashin le ya gata di yor sumar rwa. Ta di ngana nganzo de yugen lobjo zwa ta nganzo yugen ya ta chagun kari na ta kien zu sun duka tangbo ne pa umma tenju busung sha rwa. Mi wawana mea bache. But usually he believes that when the teachers, even though they kind of focus more on the Prasangika Madhyamika school, which is the highest Buddhist school of thought reality, but they also try to explain other schools, you know, very briefly though, you know, to be able to do that, you know, to be so that you see some kind of a connection and they're more than just the Prasangika school, you know.
What the thing is, so so good, and then forget to give your mother, so so good, Miguelia, and it's a lot of training.
But Geshe-la does recognize that these matters are kind of not an easy thing to understand, so it's not enough that a teacher says one time or a couple of times, but this from our side needs a lot of effort that we need to study, you know, the different schools of thought, and then, you know, so it needs more efforts than just simply listening to explanation once or twice, you know. But if you really kind of, how should I say, I mean, if you take the thing more seriously, he thinks that if we really try to understand what does dependent arising mean from the ultimate perspective or the highest level, you know, we really need to deal with the other ways of understanding what dependent arising is, because it actually demands to be able to understand the highest level. You know, it demands us to understand other ways of knowing what dependent arising means. So sometimes maybe the teachers here, they don't necessarily use those terms. So as if like you feel like, okay, we're not hearing about different schools. But they do present, for example, when we talk about dependent arising, I think often the teachers would say, okay, there are different ways of understanding dependent arising. The level one is dependent arising in terms of cause and effect relationship, causes and conditions. Well, but they're really presenting that from Chidamatan's point of view, you know. So when we talk about causes and conditions and such things, ultimately we have to really fall back on the different states of mind and perceptions we are dealing with. You know, how do things appear to you at different levels, you know? But what is the reality? What is the disparity between how things exist and how things appear to you and all of those things? So that's how we have to deal with these different schools of thought and that leading ultimately to the Prasangika Madhyamika school, you know? So the point I'm trying to probably make here is, you know, maybe the teacher has presented such things, but if you really want to know more about and details everything, then we have to focus on, the treatises or the texts dealing with different schools of thought, because there are particular texts dealing with different schools of thought, and we have to learn about that, you know, more systematically, if you will, you know. Okay, any hands? How about, yes, yeah.
But living away, when we're living away, we don't think about what people need to come back.
Right.
But although when I'm living away, I don't think, I don't think about coming back, but I still think about that because I know what I'm living.
Mm-hmm.
But when I don't think, don't give back, but my mind's still living.
Okay.
My mind still thinking about that.
Mm-hmm.
How do I do anything?
Oh, so, okay, I see. Okay, got it. I think the question that's being asked is, while Geshe-la was explaining to us, when we practice giving or generosity, right, don't think anything coming back in return or something, just don't think about it, just give it, you know, without attachment, let go completely. The point that he's bringing it up is, yeah, he doesn't think about what I'm going to get back, but still he thinks about what he gives. You know, is that your point, right? So how can we practice without thinking about anything? You just give and that's it, you know, period. You know. So the point Geshe-la want to make is, there's nothing wrong to think about that whatever gift you give, provided that thought or the remembrance helps you to rejoice in the positive thing that you did. You know, it's wonderful I had the opportunity to give that things and you're really happy and I wish I can do more. In that sense, if you think about that, then it's fine. You know, so thinking about what you give is not necessarily wrong or anything wrong with that. You know, it might even help you to rejoice in your own positive actions. Okay. Yes, Dorinla.
I have about 5 or 7 minutes of something about giving after a dedication. So.
Okay, sure. All right, then. Okay, Hunter.
Okay. I was looking for particular information.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They brought the book here, and it was kind of a rare book.
Mm-hmm.
And I found what I needed.
Mm-hmm.
But I also found that the book had a Tipton Harvey Lane Library stamp in it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what do you do with that, right?
And, And so I haven't returned the book yet.
Okay.
And I kind of feel like, is it I'm stealing from the stealer?
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
Or am I, you know, it's a kind of sensitive issue because I don't think she thought it was
right.
Our book, even though it had her stamp
in it. Okay.
And, I mean, in the same way, you know, there's another situation where I found a whole bunch of Tibetan Pecha, and it all had UCLA library stamp.
Right.
You know, like
19. Is it a photocopy or a real one?
No, text, 1995 or something. And so I called UCLA, I called them, like, hours of calls trying to find the right department. I had to leave messages, I got several messages. When somebody finally called, they said they don't have any recollection of it, but they only left a message. So it never got resolved either, so I still have those.
Okay. All right.
I don't know where they came from, if they were discarded, they didn't say discarded. So, you know, it's like these kind of subtle issues also take hours and consume a lot of time.
Right.
Just looking at, you know,
So your question is,
well,
what to do with this, or what is...
Well, it's also like the subtle aspects of...
Okay. I hope I can capture what Anila said. It was a whole thesis there, but I'm just saying for the internet people, my friends, sometimes they write me. So, okay, I think the point Anila is making here is that she needed some particular information, and another person brought a book that contained the information. And she got the information she needed, but she also, you know, discovered more information that the book had the stamp of the TDL, and so it means maybe the book originally belonged to the TDL, and now she hasn't, I mean, she has the book, so Anila kind of humorously said that it seems like she has, you know, stolen the thing from the stealer, the book, right? So it's kind of the practice of the generosity, and as we go more into the depth, there's some subtle nuances, and, you know, things like that and how to deal with that. And another thing she mentioned is about, you know, she found these Tibetan scriptures we call Pecha, but it had the stamp of UCLA. And so she worked hard to call them and, you know, get to the right people. And you all know, right, when you are on the phone, you know, how much time and energy that takes. But finally came through someone and they said they have no record of, you know, that. So probably that means, you know, it belongs to us. I'm just kidding. And so, I mean, how, what do you do, you know, these things, I mean, situation like that? And kaba mangbo tan da tam di chenzo le labde kal kon se java chasa mara tham de chu ran kon zo le ya di yar bge thor bge me du sug du so ro wa ta dire se ko tizu mangbo sib chola ta ne ro wa ni se dire yung du da se za chimbe nyam le che de la ma sab lo mangbo stan ju ka da dire ne ju thamo de ne thing du ro wa kan de se ur sug da
ne ta da zo yar la quran ge tan da te ke ng jo ra
no
ta de ta ge le ge da tham jo yin ge de de quran ge ne tu den ta ge le ge de ne ne che nyu yin ne quran ta re 그래서 이게 매우는 길대는 코란의 야는 지금 다 지금
그게요. 와 제대는이?
어 마음이나 코란의 다들 성취하면은 꿈 꿈에는.
Okay, we're dealing with the first situation I'm not talking about. Maybe then it will be the same for the rest, the next one. Now the person, let's assume the person borrowed that from TDL library, okay? Now the person has not returned the book back. I don't know how long it has been, years, okay? So in this case, I'm technically speaking, you know, for that person, that would involve like stealing because, you know, the book belongs to TDL but has not returned to the owner, okay? So you keep it, something which belongs to somebody else, so that can amount to stealing, okay? Are you clear with that part? Mm-hmm. Now about Anila, right? Stealing from the stealer, that's what she said. Now if Anila does not return the book to the person, let's say Kifora, then you will amount of stealing too. Because at the moment, the person is the owner, so to speak, of that book. Okay. And what Geshe-la remembers, he said, in the monastic Vinaya, Vinaya is the discipline textbook, there is a mention of this example clearly. Let's say for some reason, you know, he lost his sugar, the upper yellow robe, right? He sent it for laundry, and they lost it, the other person. But somebody found it, but never returns to him, right? But he loses it, and since somebody found it, he uses it. So in which case, so long as in his mind he doesn't let go that sugar, everybody who uses his sugar will amount of stealing the sugar from him. See? Yeah. So this is kind of similar situation, isn't it?
Yes.
So this is why I was saying before, like if you lose anything, you know, the best practice is to let go. Otherwise, if somebody finds it, you know, never return this, that person will end up, you know, the negativity of stealing. But if you let go, then that protects them from, okay, I'm going to come back to you, Bob. Right, that's the one thing. So that's what we said, if you lose something, just better dedicate it. Whoever found it or needed it, that's it, you know, so that the other person doesn't, you know, get involved into creating negativity. Now, coming back to Anila, if Anila's mind, he said, okay, actually you can't because you know who you borrowed the book, right? The book from. He said, okay, if the person asks for the book, I'm going to return it to him, then it wouldn't constitute stealing. You know, but if your mind, you think, okay, now it's like I got the book and, you know, I'm going to hold it, then it can constitute, you know, stealing. Yes, Paul.
Yeah. Can't give the book
right
to this person because right they're not a
right
person.
Right.
So in essence, right, now Anila has a book that belongs to Thupten Darje Ling,
right,
and she returns it to the other person,
right.
She's then stealing from Thupten Darje Ling,
uh-huh,
in a way, and then she gets heavier karma of stealing from right the Triple J.
Right. Okay, Bob goes a very interesting question, yeah, because the situation. What Bob said is that that's in the case of the book that belongs to Thupten Darje Ling, that Anila has it right now. Now, we know that Thupten Darje Ling is an institution, right? So it's not a person who lends you book or does anything like that. So now if Anila, you know, does not, let's say, I mean, return the book to the other person who didn't return us the book, then wouldn't it be like her stealing would be more serious because now you have stolen from, because Thupten Darje Ling is a Dharma institution, so stealing from, right, the jewel of Dharma, so to speak, you know. and I'm going to come back to you. Okay, let me finish this part. Ta bob gla de gana pena tanda tep anala ya sa jo sio rwa tuben ta jeling yin ne tep ta ge se anala ge tuben ta jelan la de de malo se mi de lo bena ta ta ge ko ku ma sa de ne rwa se de nyaba de che cha ma la ge tuben ta jelan yin se de ko khang sa ji ma la ko cho ba rwa cho ba de de ya de ji de le chi ge yo ma rwa se ne se anala ge de che we na tuben ta jelan ne tep ku rwa cha we na da di kun jo sum ge ko ku ba sa cha ge ma rwa sta di
First,
Kishla wants to clarify that if Anila, let's say, returned the book to him, let's say, doesn't return to GDL, one of the things he said, would it constitute stealing from the three jewels, right? That's one. He said, that wouldn't be, because this would be stealing from what belongs to our collectivity of people. So then that constitutes all of us, right? But anything we offer here, if we take it from the Buddha, that would be stealing from the three jewels. Okay? Yeah, no, that's why I'm coming back to you. That's why I said that's my issue, you know, who you should be returning the book to, because it belongs to TD. This is why I'm asking. He said, well, the proper procedure is you borrowed from him, so you really need to return to him. And if there is understanding, you can explain, don't you think this is what's happening, right? Whatever. So then that person has to return it to TDL. But if you return it to TDL, he still is like amount of stealing, because he should be returning the book to TDL, you know? Or he or she or they, let's put in a more, they, you know, need to return the book, because you borrowed from them, you know, so that's how proper channel. Okay, you were going to say something.
I was thinking that maybe, what about if she talks to the person and tells them that, you know, tells the person that she feels...
Right, it belongs to you, did it. Right.
Maybe they forgot.
Right.
So to give a chance to that person to right. actually return it, or to offer to that person to
that return
it for them. So
right.
Nobody's wrong.
Right, right. Okay, I think we should stop there. We have a few announcements. I remember Doran has some more. And announcement, His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, will be on CNN at 2 p.m. today. I saw some emails at 1 and 5 p.m. So, really? Oh, you did? Okay. CNN. With what's his name, Farid Zahar or Zakira or Zakira Farid or something, one of, you know, the prominent journalists there. There will be no teaching on May 24th, that's right, Memorial Day weekend. And I'll confess that I have to go to attend a commencement ceremony for my good students, so I won't be available Sunday, but I guess this is Memorial weekend, so anyway, you get off, right? So happy Mother's Day to everyone, even the fathers who have been mothers before, I would say. So prayer for people in Santa Barbara. By the way, this morning I heard the news that the fire has been controlled 55% and most of the people could return back, except few people in that real area where the fire happened. Okay, so that's all good news. Really? Okay. So one day Mahayana precepts next Sunday at 5:30, right? Those who would like to attend them. What is next Sunday? Is that 24th?
No.
Oh, 17th. Okay. All right, so welcome to that. And yeah, before we even do the dedication, I would give chance to our Doran Harper for a few words. Sure, yes.
Let him.
Thank you, Geshe-la, for the teachings on giving today. Very good. It kind of lends credence to what I'm about to speak about, and Tenzinla for translating and elucidating the teachings of Geshe-la and for the many years of service that you've given to Thupten Tharyu Ling, which is a collective of students that appreciate both Geshe-la's teachings and Geshe Gelson's teachings and Annie Tenzin Kacho, Venerable Tenzin Kacho. I promised that I would wait until she was here to talk about her great kindness. And there's so much to say that it's already 10 after 12, and I don't want to keep people here for a long time. But Thupten Tharyu Ling has a long history. And Venerable Tenzin Kacho has played a major role in this history. And I promised the internet friends, and to, for the record, and for the students that are here, to come and talk about Thupten Tharyu Ling every Sunday if I can. And Annie Tenzin Kacho has been, one of the most important students of Venerable Geshe Gelson. And when Geshe-la was alive and younger, he created, as we do in our relative world, a will. And in his will, he had thought about the future of Thupten Tharyu Ling in his will, and he saw that Annie Tenzin Kachola was most dedicated, becoming a Sangha member in 1984, thereabouts. Excuse me, 85, if I get any of the dates wrong. And he has always seen her trying to learn and become what she has become today, and stated in his will that if something happened to him, that Thupten Tharyu Ling would be taken care of by Venerable Tenzin Kachula. And if she declined or realized that maybe that wasn't the proper thing to do at that time, that it would then go to Ganden Sharsi Monastery, Geshe-la's home monastery. So as Geshe-la was aging and getting closer to his point of passing into his Kaya's state, he asked Venerable Tenzin Kachula about this situation. And there are some old board members here that are present today since the beginning of Thupten Tharyu Ling. And being that we're a dependent collective of students, it seems that Venerable Tenzin Kacho made the most supreme gift of giving, as Geshe-la was teaching today about giving, to see that the impermanent nature of ourselves is very short time, and that we change as we get older and we take on different paths and roles, that becoming a teacher is the most honorable, and not to talk about the aworldly dharmas, but it's the best way of giving. And she is a great teacher, as Geshe-la said, and she's even given up her position of teaching at Thupten Tharyu Ling by seeing the benefits of Venerable Geshe-la and other qualified teachers here to give teachings to all of us, even though she's present and capable of doing so. And so that leads up to her other gift that is the most incredible, and that is, as Geshe-la was passing away, she declined to receive Thupten Tharyu Ling as something that she would be taking care of the rest of her life, and saw that the benefit to the center and to all the students would be to give it to some entity that has thousands of years of existence for spreading the Buddha Dharma and giving the Buddha Dharma to all of the sentient beings that are existent, and even on the internet and in other ways, will become getting the Dharma from the teachers that are becoming to Thupten Tharyu Ling in the future from Ganden Sharsi Monastery. And from that point, we owe the greatest gratitude to Venerable Tenzin Kachula for this incredible gift that she's given to all of us, and wishing her a happy Mother's Day for that gift. Because of her kindness, you know, we have the incredible future of being a center that can provide Dharma for the West beyond our lives. And that is something that we all should rejoice in and give thanks for today. And something I didn't address before that I promised I would address again today, and that is some terminologies that we use. And one of them is a spiritual director. And in Tupin Dargye Ling, this was a center that was founded by Venerable Geshe Gelson. And he was our spiritual director. He was our CEO. He was our president. He told and appointed the board members for the Tupin Dargye Ling Board of Directors over the years. He chose from a selection of volunteers and people that offered to be servants in service to him, who he felt would be best serving. I don't know how I got there, but anyway. Anila is, as we've mentioned, you know, as we've announced, the forthcoming board of directors, or the forthcoming monastery that is coming to take the ability to continue the longevity of Tupin Dargye Ling into the lifetimes of the future. She has been, you know, not looked upon by myself properly, because she is our spiritual director in the sense that she is guiding us by offering the teachings that are here at Tupin Dargye Ling by the teachers that are being, that are teaching us now. She has offered to the board of directors the guidance that the board of directors needs, as a Geshe-la did as CEO, by providing our agendas and items that we need to address. And she has provided the utmost sacrifice to teaching and providing service to hospice, which she has dedicated more and more of her life to. She has also, you know, worked with her brother to produce an incredible book about the understanding of Western culture and Eastern culture. And so I hope to be able to address more in the future about the structure of Tupin Dargye Ling. But I wanted to take Mother's Day special day to thank all of you mothers that are here. There's mothers that are here who've given their sons to the monastery to continue to learn the Dharma, to become a traditional of providing that future for us. There's a Venerable, you know, Annie McCormick, who's been a dedicated secretary to Geshe-la for many, many years. And there are many people that are not here today that are still alive, and many people here that have passed, that have helped Tupin Dargye Ling and Geshe-la serve him to be what it is today. So I think I've said enough.
Okay, I take the liberty to really sincerely thank Doran Harbor, who I have known personally for since I came to this country. I think he's one of the most dedicated persons, but you know, very humble and down to earth. And unless he is forced to, by situation, circumstances, to come and speak in front of us, he's the one who wouldn't dare to do that, or, you know, as you can see. So thank you very much for all your service and dedication, too. That's more from my personal side, because I have no administrative responsibility to thank anybody. Okay, let's do the quick return prayer. Yeah, anybody can start it? Okay, no, you're back.
Oh, infinite Buddha and Bodhisattvas, you are the embodiment of
kindly pour on us now your blessings, rains of nectar from the great clouds, of your pervasive, pure, and bright wisdom and compassion to eliminate our distress. We pray to you, an incomparable great hero, who has perfectly realized within his mind the threefold ethics, a pure essence of the extensive system of Tathagata's teaching. He who has raised a parasol of Dharma in hundreds of directions. Your body is a sun of all wonderful qualities, but all of a sudden it's set into solitary peace. You have committed before infinite Buddhas to work for Dharma and sentient beings. You could not have given up your commitment. However, your presence depends on the fortunes of disciples. for the power of dependent arising is inconceivable. Please reincarnate soon as a new light of Dharma. Out of your compassion that never abandons us, please return soon as a supreme spiritual guide, a treasure house of the immense teaching of Buddha, a voice that eloquently elucidates the teaching that suits individuals' dispositions and capacities. Please return soon as a great Dharma king who will be known in all directions for smashing into pieces a mountain of misguided teachings and views through the power of your thunderbolt lightning of the three reasoning. Please return soon just like your previous self, an expert in the five major sciences of Buddhism, whose eloquent words and articulation of the teaching captivate the hearts of all the scholars and activate deep appreciation in pure, enthusiastic mind. Please return soon as a spiritual guide, endowed with complete knowledge, kindness, and dedication, in regard to the perfect view, meditation, and conduct, one who facilitates the opening of the blossomed lotus, that is the golden teaching of Tsongkhapa. By the power of the three infallible jewels, by the power of dependent arising of unchanging emptiness, by the truth of our pure thoughts and devotion, may all our aspirations be spontaneously fulfilled. Could you do this in Vietnamese, please? Let's do dedication, prayers.
Pendant de vos mains,
Sanje-jin-do-mi-de-vi-wa-yin-chok-yo-nam-da-jin-chok-bo-yin-jo-yi-da-man-gu-ru-ra-na-man-de-la-
Thank you, everyone.